Just to start, could just and give some overall, could Porkchop or Brad just give us an idea of the specifics of the installation, like the height, the width, what it's made of, that kind of thing?
It's 17 feet tall. It's 14 feet wide at the widest, and it's made of cardboard. That's the details.
Where was all this cardboard stored? Where did you guys have the cardboard? Or was it?
We had it from the job we just finished at the mall.
Ah, okay.
It literally was leftover material.
How did it all come about?
So basically, I guess they got in touch with you, Jen, right, Madison?
Or no? Well, I inserted myself into the, what are you guys doing for Christmas? And they told me what they were going to do. And I probably made a snarky comment about how that was not going to be that exciting and they should ask Porkchop to do something. And I guess you came up with the idea to do the cardboard tree, right? I was just like, hey, you want to, oh, I know how it started. There's all these wood scraps around the boardwalk from different jobs. So I said, would you and Brad want to build a tree out of the wood scraps that are like laying around all, like the property, because they save us materials in case any artists want to use them. And Porkchop's like, Brad and I don't have time to make a wooden tree. I'm like, okay. And then he's like, but maybe a cardboard tree. And that's sort of how it got the ball rolling. Right? I think so.
Yeah. And then I had a meeting with Madison. And they basically, you know, I was like, I'll come up with something, but then we only had like 2 weeks to get it done. This was just before Thanksgiving. So I spent like 3 days making a model, and then they liked the model and they said, go for it. And then I asked Brad to hopefully not work on his job to help me. and he was free. So that's how that happened.
Where did the idea of giving? What is behind that? What is it giving?
That's
oh
a good one.
Dear.
Listen, are we being honest, or are we towing the line on this interview?
Oh yeah, are we doing the PR statement, or are you
curious? Well, if this appears because, in print, what do you want it to look like? I mean,
oh, okay.
Yeah, we came up with a cool concept and built it, and they said, oh, we're going to spin it. We're going to write some stuff. I said, yeah, write whatever the hell you want. And when they came up with that, I was like, okay, if you want to spin it this way, then I'm whatever. I don't really care.
So Madison, you know, Marquette did the naming of it and the writing up about why.
I think Jen helped with it.
So
sure.
So basically they were like, you know, we want wooden walls to control the narrative because it kind of came out of your world. But the idea was, if Madison's going to spend a lot of money on a cut tree, wouldn't it be more impactful if they gave it to local artists working in a nonprofit manner to give back to the community that inspires them? I mean, that's kind of how it started. And then Angie Sugrum wrote the press release. And then this woman that's been doing, she actually pitched it for us to Madison. Her name is Devin Smith, and she's doing like part-time Instagram stuff for them. And she just loved the wooden wall. So she's like, this is like a no-brainer. Artists don't need stories. It's like the work speaks for itself, but the rest of the world that doesn't speak in that language needs the story.
I mean, for me, it was about making something that's visually cool looking and out of a material that we could use, and it could be quick and it's strong and it looks good. And whatever, you know, it that happens with any kind of piece of art that you put out in the public. Everybody has their own way of looking at it, and they come up with their own story, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and the way it came out, you know, people, there was a million different stories.
I mean, do you think one of the controversies is because you guys took something that is so traditional and personal to people, and I mean, but that's what art does, and turned it into something that no one would expect. And instead of a tree, it's a piece of art.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, I think if Brad and I did that in August and put that thing in there and it had nothing to do with Christmas or a Christmas tree or a tradition or stealing people's religion or all the other things that people said that we did. You know, people would just look at it as a piece of art. They wouldn't even have a problem with it. I mean, they might still call it ugly and hideous and whatever, but it wouldn't have had the same effect, I don't think. I think because it was at the time of Christmas and, you know, you lump that whole thing in and then people really get upset.
But if art, as you've said, I'm sure, is supposed to evoke an emotion, is public controversy over any art installation a good or a bad thing? I mean, isn't it good to have people talk about it, regardless of whether they like it or not?
Of course, yeah. I mean, that's what art is for.
Have you ever done anything else that created as much of a stir?
No. No, this is awesome. It's seriously.
You do something that's good, traditional.
But I mean, have I done anything that's caused such a stir? Not artistically.
But. Okay, we don't have to go there.
But is it a good stir? I mean, do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a great stir. It's any attention is good attention, as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely any attention. And I'm not even seeking out the attention. I mean, I love it, but I'm not looking for it. This was such a great surprise. It was like, yay, look at all this attention. Okay.
That's true. As a curator, how do you think artists and a city and a city that they live in can work together better to grow more synergistically? Because oddly enough, like Porkchop said, the city had nothing to do with this. Okay, so I find it ironic that it's putting Asbury Park in the news again, okay, even though Asbury Park had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And to your point about the, you know, for artists, you have to defend your work. I was just gonna say, like, it's interesting because of the, it seems like people that come to Asbury embrace public art in all shapes and sizes and forms. And this is the first time we've heard something negative about public art. And it's a good like reality check to like where people's comfortability lies, because I feel like it's important as a curator, as an artist that's living in a small city like Asbury Park, to like push the envelope, to not be the town that's like, oh, look at this cute little public art thing. Like I take pride that our public artists and our artists in Asbury Park and our local ones that are at a caliber of like, that could be nationally recognized. And so I think if I were running the city, I would notice what sort of attention public art has shined upon Asbury Park. And I think that I would try my best to facilitate more local artists to become a caliber of artists that our local artists have become in the past. I mean, Brad and Porch haven't been doing art in Asbury Park for 25 years. And so whether people are looking or not, they're making art, you know, and it just takes, you know, I'm just the middleman that says, hey, this is a good idea. And I'm constantly going to the city, like, we need to push this envelope. And it really sadly comes down to money. So I think that the money spent in Asbury Park would be better used in some capacity, facilitating and growing an artist community, because as we've seen with COVID, if music shuts down, what do we have left? And if you see the economic driver of art, like we just did in Miami, but it's very short-sighted to not try to grow that into a bigger thing.
So basically what you're saying is the city should be spending their money in art because the return is great or greater than the other ways they're spending it.
Yeah, and I think that there's creative ways to do that. And as Mike and I had preached 12 years ago, we should have started the 1% for public art with the developer spending over $5 million, because then I think we would have had a very vibrant art scene here. That we've lost that opportunity. So now we're, you know, it's not that the city should spend money, but if the city makes you plant a tree, the city should also make you put money into a fund that funds public art, in my opinion.
What Arts Rule is trying to do, if I can paraphrase us, is to show how cities can work with artists to make it a win-win for both sides. Asbury Park shows that there's a lot of art growing here. So how can other cities do the same kind of thing is what we're hoping the blog will do. Mm-hmm. So if one of the attributes of an art-centric city is merging artists and patrons, what's the most important thing you see for bringing them together? Because you are the middleman. There are artists in town, you know, or artists who come to town, and there are patrons, whether that's the city or individuals who are buying art. How do you bring them together? How can any other city do what you are doing? First steps. I mean, obviously it's a long process and it's not a one size fits all, but I'm a small city. I know there's artists in my city. I know I want more art to appear in my city. What do I do? How do I bring the two together?
Lots and lots of conversation and handholding. I feel like a lot of times, I mean, it took 6 years to get the wooden walls. Brad and Porkchop made these beautiful murals in the casino building because they just wanted to paint something. And it took them donating their time and energies to prove to a development company like, oh, people will care about art if we put it on our walls, and it gives you more. So whether the catalyst is a conversation and an action, first is identifying your creatives and who is aligned with your vision. And then I think it's okay, who within the realms of the city government or the development or where the money, who spends money in our town that understands that art is an economic driver is who I would try to talk to. So it's about educating them. It's about seeing the return of your investment. So for instance, the number of interactions that the tree that Porkchop and Brad made is equivalent to $800,000 worth of press dollars.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you make something, you hope that you're, you know, that people find value in it enough to, you know, put money in your pocket, you know what I mean? But that's not always the case. And like Jen said, it takes a long time to sort of educate people to see that, no, it actually makes a difference. Like, and just the fact, like if you look on Facebook or Instagram, it's like every other day, somebody's like, oh, I saw the tree. I came so far and I saw the tree and I love it. And then while I was here, I spent $200 on a bunch of knickknacks. And
totally.
You know what I mean? So I guess the more that happens, the more that the people who have money who don't necessarily get it will see like, oh, you know, that was actually a good thing that we put this weird Christmas tree up and it caused a stink and had people coming from all over the place to you know, throw money back into the town.
Going back to like the monetary and what Porkchop was saying is that I was talking to him about it this morning. When we gave them a price, they came down. We said, we're talking to each other. We're like, yeah, I understand if you don't want to do it. Yeah, I understand if you don't want to do it. And then we're both like, yeah, but we got to do it. This is going to be cool. Like, we'll be the heroes either way. And everything after that is gravy. It's like, holy crap. Not only we are the heroes, because the people that get it and they love it. And I think that's the majority of the people. The people that don't get it, one, I don't care. And two, go complain all day. It's still there. It's still going to stay there, you know?
So how do you, I mean, this is a question I've always asked, and I asked my cousin who was an artist, how do you value, how do you put a price tag on your work when it comes to trying to get what you believe is fair versus what you think the person who's commissioning it is going to pay?
Because it sounds like there was some haggling, you know, as there is in any transaction, you know.
There's always haggling, in any kind of art endeavor, there's always some haggling. People don't necessarily find the value in it. Not everybody, but you know, everybody's always like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. Like, you know, there's always that.
I could have done that.
Yeah, my kid could do that. Yeah. I mean, as far as like, what do I think my work is worth? It's as much as somebody's willing to pay for it. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, you know, you try to do it. Like if you're an artist for your profession or whatever, you try to do this thing where like, let's say your first painting's worth $10 and then the next painting's worth 20. And then you try to build your career that way, you know, but there's always a certain point where people, you know, somebody's gonna be like, are you kidding me? There's no way I would ever spend that kind of money for piece of cardboard. And then somebody will be like, oh, that's it. You know, I'd pay double, you know? So it's art and it's subjective. So you never really know as far as the worth part of it.
Asking all three of you, and you could take your time, whichever one wants to talk about it first, but there are plenty of cities who have art galleries that are not considered art-centric cities. What do you think makes a city considered an art-centric city? Or maybe just characteristic?
An artsy town. In other words, people would go there because, or want to live there because it's got this reputation of being an art city town, art centric town.
I mean, I think Asbury has had that, you know, stigma that it's an artsy town, and there wasn't any even art really happening. Do you know what I mean? Like, there was always music, but like, I don't know, 20 years ago when there was nothing here, and Brad had his gallery, that, you know, we were hanging stuff in the trees and stuff just because there was nobody around to tell us not to. But I mean, that, I guess, started the sort of artsy town nonsense, but there really hasn't been that many artists working here for that long. But I guess that's what it is. It's you know, public art, and where you could drive around and see stuff, and it's like, oh well, that place is artsy because they have murals on the walls, and it's not, you know, whatever. That's what I think.
So it's perception.
Yeah, when you can actually physically see art out in the public, you know, if you go through a town that has no art and it just has a couple art galleries, I wouldn't necessarily say that's an artsy town.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's beyond perception. It's like, you know, we just got back from Miami, and if you asked anybody, they'd say, oh, Miami's an artsy town. I wouldn't say it's an artsy town. I would say that it is a town that is the setting for one of the largest art events in the country. However, if you go to New Orleans, I would always say that that's an artsy town, yet they don't have a lot of art events in the same way Miami does. And I think the difference is that art and music, like the creative endeavors in New Orleans seem to be organic, like they bubble up from the ground. Like there isn't a place that you can go in New Orleans and not see a street performer or, you know, in the Bywater, somebody painted a mural of somebody eating like dinner on their little storefront because that's what they wanted to do because they thought that would be better than a sign. Like there's an organic creation that happens there. And I think Asbury Park has had bits and pieces of that, and combined with show flyers and seeing art on, you know, street poles because, or, you know, whatever, because of the Stone Pony and stuff, all of a sudden in comparison to the rest of New Jersey, you're like, whoa, that is a weird artsy town because they have weird people walking around or people that don't look like the people in my neighborhood, or, you know, these kids took a bowling alley and they made it a music venue, or, you know, the Howard Johnson had art shows, or, you know, Brad had his gallery when nobody had anything here. So I do think that there's been like every once in a while, these things bubble up and then all of a sudden people are like glom onto it, like, oh, this is, and they take pride in it, which I think is the most exciting part of people thinking Asbury Park's an artsy town. But I think to ask people in the arts, is it an artsy town? I don't know if I would say yes. I don't know.
Brad, you were here as well when there were tumbleweeds going down the street. I mean, has Asbury Park, in your opinion, become more or less art centric?
Less, but it's less. Like, I think it's less. I mean, the thing is, it's a very, I think the creativity and the artisticness of the town is more, but as far as like the amount of people coming in, you would have to have, they would have to be, I don't know, 250 really good artists and artistic people with the rest of the population that has come here in 20 years. Mm. How many of the, you know, 5,000-6,000 people that are here, again, I don't know what the numbers are, but listen, the apartment buildings are filling up quickly. And I don't see a whole bunch of artists popping out every day telling us about their shit they're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I think back when Brad had his gallery, there was a hand, And that the amount of artists were more like in the ratio. So it seemed more creative back then, I think.
And right. And that has a lot to do with, you know, the fact that it's tough to find any kind of affordable housing here.
I think we're in a pickle, because if you really, to go back to your first question, how can the city and curators and artists work together in tandem? That would take a insurmountable amount of work for the city government to understand their B needs of be affordable housing and C affordable rents and storefronts so people could have galleries. I mean, when Brad had his gallery, he probably during Amy Quinn and I counted how many galleries there have been since Brad was here. And it's something like 60, like spaces that showed art and sold art. There was something like, I don't know, 38 galleries that have come and gone in 10 years. That's a terrible number. And why is that number that, you know? And so I think that to Brad's point, there might be artists living here. It's just not our definition of artists. So like there's way more photographers that live here and that have moved here because they feel it's a creative community. There's lots of makers that consider themselves artists. These holiday markets are filled with people in the area that are like, I have a stationery business. I do hand lettering. So I think as we get more diverse yet not diverse, you're going to see this. I don't think you're going to see sculptors in our town because there's no place to sculpt. There's no affordable places for a sculptor to rent space. Like Porkchop can't find a home. Like that's insanity to me. You know, you might see painters, we have tattoo artists. I just think it changes the definition of the artistic sort of community here.
What would you say is probably one of the best things that's happened because of this?
Meaning the tree?
The tree, yeah.
I don't know if we've seen any of the results enough yet to make that decision. You know what I mean? It's still kind of early. I mean, a lot of people know Brad and I's name now, whether that turns into work or dollars or whatever, we'll have to see. But you know, people forget things real fast also.
It is interesting. I was in Home Goods yesterday with a friend and she was commenting about how dumb the tree controversy was. And that's not what people want to talk about, which I think is still a good thing to Brad's point, because it makes people think. Like, I would like to interview every single person that comes to see this cardboard tree and be like, do you remember what color the lights were on the last tree that was in Convention Hall? And I don't think anyone would remember because it's not memorable. What they did is memorable.
Well, you know, one more point going back to the artsy or artistic is that you need the people to care about it enough to buy it and buy it a piece of $10,000 art, that's one thing. But this tree is bringing revenue to the shop owners in the arcade. Now, an artsy town is New Hope, Provincetown, where there's foot traffic constantly. So you can have a leather store, you can have a pottery store. Here, you would need so much foot traffic to keep the rent up for a pottery studio. I mean, we already know, like Greg LaPlaca, he left Asbury to go to Point Pleasant because he couldn't afford to be here. He's right. A potter, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's foot traffic and revenue.
And what makes you think that Asbury can't, I mean, obviously.
They can. Sorry, finish your question. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, the question is, isn't that what the goal of all these developers is trying to do, is bring traffic in here?
Sure, but
no, that is not their goal at all. Their goal is to sell condos. Come on, you gotta be honest.
The thing is, if they want that to happen, then they have to have the rents comparable to have those people here that drive the narrative that this is a artsy, cool, you know, crazy, different, wild place that people want to be. You know what I mean? They want that narrative, but they don't give back to the artists to make that shit happen.
Jen made that point. Yeah, I guarantee Brad and Porkchop, off their efforts, have made more money for a developer than they've made for themselves. No doubt.
Yeah.
Because what happens is, if you're going to justify selling a $500,000 condo, you have to justify that it has an elevated lifestyle. And what is an elevated lifestyle? People think a concentration on an arts community and a literary community and a theater community and having a great coffee shop. And they do this checklist in their brain, like, well, why am I paying 500,000? But, you know, it's frustrating to know that that's the role of the gallery. You are the lost leader to sell condos to a certain degree. And that's kind of what the arts community, because of iStar, that's kind of what the arts community has become, is like this little, like Porkchop said, this little weird tag at the beginning of every like article they've had written in this artsy little town, 42 miles south of Manhattan, you know? And so all of a sudden the arts have become a tagline without having to pay into that fund to make sure that that garden still grows. I don't get it. Yes, all of this press happened as just per chance, but it continues to prove the point that the only thing of substance that you guys have been written about in 2 years is because Porkchop and Brad made a tree and Hot Tea came in and put 6,000 strings up in the sky. Like, you know what I mean? So it's how many times do we have to do this?
Yeah. How can we break down that wall between the buyer and the seller of the art?
My honest answer is I have no idea. I do not care. It's not my problem. Like, I have a hard enough time keeping my shit busy and making my own art, let alone worrying about how to make people want it and like it and make a community more. Like, I got to worry about, I mean, me and mine. I mean, I don't mean that in a, it sounds like a total asshole, but I mean it as far as that answer. If I took the time to actually try to find that answer, I couldn't do anything else. That would be all I would be able to focus on.
I don't know if I could be, let's say next year, I don't know if I could be like, look, I'm gonna make this cardboard Santa Claus and you're gonna get so much press because of X, Y, and Z. Like, the reason why that happened was it was kind of a weird fluke, and it's because we're in Jersey and people love to bitch about shit, and it was at Christmas. And that's why it went, the story was more about people bitching than the actual piece of art.
Right. You know
what I mean? Yeah.
So it's not like I could say like, well, look, every time I make something, it turns to gold and it goes across the United States and people are going to talk about it in Australia. Cause I could say that it happened once. I don't know if I could do that every time.
Right.
You have a point. Absolutely.
There's so many things that go into play about Asbury Park. It's art. It's in this historic building that's amazing. You know what I mean? In itself, it's 17 feet, which is crazy. You know, I think that there was all of these elements that came together because, like, if it weren't Asbury Park, I don't know if people would have picked up the story. But what happened is more people are interested in Asbury Park because of the reputation we already have. So, in my mind, half our work is already done. We have a reputation. Then now, all we'd have to do is actually do art projects, and then it would also get picked up. Like, it does. It just seems like a kind of no-brainer.
But the public art definitely garners you some respect because people can come into Asbury Park and see public art. Yeah. Without the public art, you can call yourself art-centric, but you really don't have a leg to stand on because there's nothing that the public can see. There's something about public art which makes it important.
And also quality public art. So I think we're the only project outside of like Venice Beach that has murals next to the ocean. So like, it's unique in that. So I think that you are, to your point, if it were just a bunch, if we didn't have the caliber of local artists we did to start the project, it wouldn't have grown this far. Like, if Brad and Porkchop sucked as artists and they were like, oh, that's cute, look at that nice little drawing or painting, I think it would have fallen short. And I don't think other artists would have been interested in the project had they not seen the caliber of what we had done at a local level. As a curator, what I'm trying to do is elevate our art world here so that people outside of our bubble can know who Brad Hoffer is and Porkchop and, you know, James Vance and all these local artists that we have that live and work here, so they can go out in the world and keep spreading this idea that there is good art in Asbury Park. That's my goal.
How do you think you're doing with that?
I have a lot more work to do, I guess. until I can say to get sponsorship and partners that say, oh, I totally understand why this is important, and let's make this art and our artists part of the fabric of the development going forward. I don't want to say I failed, but it's not my bigger goal. So I just have to work harder.
Well, I have to say, I'll conclude this with how I started it. I mean, I think it's so cool and you guys deserve all the kudos.
And I think this is the tradition of Asbury Park, to do things differently and to have people notice and say, oh yeah, that's Asbury Park.
I appreciate you guys. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
We'll let you know when it's on the blog.
We'll let you know when it's up there.
Congrats, guys. All right. Oh, that's awesome.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you.